Hello, Pat.
What's happening, man?
Hey, this is Andy. How are you?
Good, man. How you doing?
Oh, I'm not too bad. Just relaxing. How about you?
Same.
Oh, man. So, I want to start at the beginning. When did you decide you wanted to be a guitar player in a band? And what were some of your earliest influences?
I started playing guitar when I was 10. I'd always been attracted to music. And actually, I first got a keyboard, but it really didn't do it for me. And
yeah.
Back then, we used to get these catalogs in the mail from wherever, Sears or whatever the hell it was. And they'd have guitars. There was one page where they'd have these guitars and these catalogs. And I just remember staring at these guitars and just like being completely obsessed with getting one, you know?
Yeah.
Up to that point, I had an older brother who's about 10 years older than me, who got me hip to bands and stuff like Led Zeppelin and The Doors and that kind of shit at a real early age. It was also, you know, the 80s, so new wave was kind of a thing, so I got hit to a lot of that stuff at an early age. But once I started playing guitar, I quickly went to, like, Led Zeppelin, the Black Sabbath, the Iron Maiden, Metallica, Slayer, then on to hardcore, and then, you know.
Music that's guitar-driven, really, naturally.
That's what?
Music that's guitar driven.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
everything's just, based like, around I mean, the guitar.
Yeah. Even to this day, I just was having this conversation with somebody. Like, I don't really listen to music that doesn't feature guitars prominently. I mean, I love some really, like, you know, late 80s or early 90s hip hop, you know, because of, you know, my age, essentially, you know. But
yeah.
Other than that, I mean, I've always listened to guitar-driven music, and once I started playing, I wanted it to be louder and faster and all that, and so that's why I kind of went that direction.
Yeah. So, like, where did, what bands were you in before Geezer formed, and tell me about the early days with Geezer itself?
I've been in the New York part. I've been prior to living upstate New York now. I lived in New York City and was playing around in New York City for the better part of 20 years in the 90s.
Yeah.
I was in a band called Slunt, starting around 2002 through 2007. That was the band that where I first got out to actually do some real touring and stuff, and we did some great stuff. We toured and opened for Marilyn Manson.
Nice.
Did a Paul Stanley solo tour.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, we also toured. The biggest thing we did was we toured with Motorhead twice, once in the States and once in Europe. So that was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And then I was in a few other bands in New York City, and then when I moved upstate about 10 years ago, my attitudes and influences started to shift a little bit. I just kind of got into old school blues stuff like Charlie Patton, Blind Willie Johnson, Funhouse, and that sort of thing. And so I kind of started over again. I got into music and finally never really had a good acoustic guitar before, and I learned how to play like open tuning slide blues and stuff. And then and eventually, that's kind of where Geezer started. Was I wanted to be, you know, back then it was like, you know, the White Stripes and the Black Keys were kind of taking their influences from a lot of those old blues guys. And
yeah.
I loved a lot of what those bands were doing, but it wasn't heavy. So
yeah.
I wanted to do kind of like that thing, do it heavy. That's kind of where Geezer started. After we did our first album, I got more into kind of the underground sort of rockabilly, and I got hit the bands like Wolfat and the Midnight Ghost Train. started to shift after that. That's when we came out with Gage, and like songs like Ancient Song kind of like took us off in a whole new direction. And the rest, I guess, as they say, is history.
Yeah, I mean, your catalog, like, I noticed, like, there's always been a progression, and I really enjoy stuff like One Leg Up, where it's really fun. It almost has, like, the simplistic kind of Stooges vibe, but taking it in different territories, like, just that, you know what I mean, that real primal, I don't know how
to
put
it. That's exactly what that song was about. I mean, it was... When it came out of a jam,
yeah.
You know, a drummer, he just started playing that. You know, he just started playing that beat, and we're like, let's do a song like with one note. And
yeah,
that's essentially where One Leg Up came from. And then right away, I thought of the Stooges. It sounded like a Stooges song to me. So when it came time for writing the lyrics or coming up with the lyrics and all that, I absolutely. Was like, well, what would he do?
Yeah.
You know, and that's on the particular is a complete homage to the Stooges, without a doubt. But I just didn't
it
like,
has its own vibe to it, though.
Yeah. As you mentioned, you know, we have a pretty big catalog at this point. We've been doing it for a while, and every album is different. And we try and touch on different things, and it's a natural progression. It's not really.
Yeah, your stuff never sounds forced. I really enjoyed Spiral Fires, and I don't know if you recall, but I did review that. That was one of my favorite records that year.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, Spiral Fires I'm super proud of that record. I thought it was a great transition. We got to mess with some ideas that we've been kicking around for a while, and, you know, I mean, look, I've been doing this a long time, man, and I've been in a lot of projects that were very focused on making it and all this stuff to where you, like, everything becomes a formula. And part
yeah.
of teasing is kind of a reaction against all that. Like, I'm not looking to grab any brass ring. I have no illusions about where I fit in the music business, even if there is such a thing anymore. So I'm in a great position to where we can do whatever we want. So if you want to do a live album that's one song and it's a 30-minute instrumental, then we're going to fucking do it. So that's kind of been our MO for pretty much the duration.
And it definitely is part of the genre, and part of why I love it so much is it's literally one thing that it'll have its cult following, and I usually akin it to the Grateful Dead, which is not meant to insult, but the people who are into it are really, really into it. And, you know, it's the same kind of cult-like following, and because of the fact that it's so brutal and so rawly produced, and like you said, you could do whatever you want. And songs come from jamming, so there's no constriction on verse, chorus, verse, or time length, or whatever. It's something that the mainstream can't really take away from the hardcore underground scene in any way. There's no viability to it.
You know? That's what was so liberating to me, was the fact, like, I mean, honestly, I had to kind of relearn a lot of that shit, you know, like... You know, listening to this fucking Dope Throne by Electric Wizard, and they have a 15-minute song, and I forget the name of it. It's one of those three-part joints. Anyway, you know,
Weird Tales.
5 minutes. Weird Tales, yeah. In the last 5 minutes, it's just one note.
Yeah.
Like when,
one sequence over and over.
Oh, my God. Yeah, and it's just a long drone, and the song itself is weird as shit, you know, so...
But
like,
it's atmospheric as fuck. Yeah, and that's one thing I started to realize, too, because I went through all the different, you know, phases in rock and metal and everything, and I found myself going towards the stoner doom genre, and, you know, stoner doom, whatever you want to call it, you know, but I just went back to that back to basics way of writing, you know, the Led Zeppelin and Black Sabbath era, you know. I don't know what it is about it. It just feels right. It feels like the way it should have progressed over the years, but didn't. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree.
And I mean, the first Sabbath album just turned 50 a couple days ago. You know,
yeah.
And it's crazy how many different things that has spawned, let alone this whole genre that seems to live underneath everything else, though.
Well, you know, it's interesting. That was another, I recently went through another kind of Black Sabbath reawakening. I started playing with a friend of mine who was doing this Sabbath cover band, and they needed a guitar player for a gig, and I was like, yeah, I'll do it. Why not? You know, it's been years since I was, you know, trying to play Sabbath songs, so figured I'd give it a whirl, you know, and we ended up doing a show that's like 2 hours long, so I had to learn essentially like almost the entire first album, almost all of Paranoid, a couple of things from Master of Reality, and I think there's one or two songs, probably two songs from Volume 4. So going through that whole process to kind of reintroduce me to the way Tony Iommi wrote his riffs, and it's just, it's amazing because it's so intimidating when you take it on its surface, but when you get inside the songs, even the arrangements are intense and all that for sure, but the riffs themselves are just intuitive stuff. Like, he wasn't sitting there trying to, you know, figure out some crazy math problem or, you know, do shit to throw people off. Like, he was just playing what came naturally. And
yeah.
That's why I think what they did resonated so strongly, is because it's like, oh yeah, this was here the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
But Tony Iommi and those guys were the ones to pick it up and go, hey, look at this, man. This is where it's at. And boom,
yeah. Yeah, for me, too, like, I had that same moment when I was about 16, well, actually, no, even later than that, in my early 20s, too, because, like, you know, the first Sabbath record inspired me greatly. It was the first one I got besides a crappy bootleg Greatest Hits cassette tape that was, like, the tape itself was damaged because it would, like, just get quiet at parts it shouldn't have and stuff, but, And this was still years ago before, like, you know, dial-up internet was still a thing. But I remember the first Sabbath album. I had a European edition, the gatefold and everything. And I remember just being mesmerized by the music and the inner gatefold and experiencing that when I was, like, 12 or 13. And it slightly scared me, to be honest with you.
Of course it did.
But,
That's what was beautiful about it.
Yeah. And it freaked me out because the next day we had a really bad, like, flooding and storm, and it knocked out the power while I was listening to it. And I was bummed out I couldn't play it anymore, but I was also kind of like, did I do that? Because of everything I had been told, you know. But, you know, and then I went through a punk phase and everything else, and, you know, and punk's still a part of what I do, too. Just as much as anything else, but I had the same reawakening of going back to those early things like Sabbath, and, you know, I'm just like, wow, like, you take it for granted after a while when you get into other stuff, but then when you go back to it, you're like, man, why don't more bands do that? And then you find out there's a whole genre dedicated to it. I found out about it through a book I read in high school by Ian Christie, and it mentioned, like, stoner doom metal, and I'm like, what's that? And it described it and gave a top 10 list of albums, like St. Vitus, Born Too Late, The Obsessed, you know, The Church Within, Trouble,
yeah.
Psalm 9. It gave you a start off, and it even had Sleep's Holy Mountain in there. So I made sure I scribbled these down because it was a library book. And, well, here I am. I started doing this stuff 10 years ago now. So.
Yeah, for me, it was when I discovered stonerrock.com. The ladies knew this before. This was the early years of the internet, back 2000 or so.
Yeah.
And you couldn't really find
When I first started writing in late 2009, very early 2010, I actually started off writing for a website called doommetal.com, and they sent me a lot of different stuff that, I mean, the second record review I ever did in my life was one of Val's records. I don't know if you know them, but they incorporate a lot of different stuff into their sound. And it, I had never heard anything like it before. They were called Thou. T-H-O-U.
Oh, Thou, yeah. Yeah, no, I never really got hit
them. Yeah.
I know what they are, though.
Well, they're a more extreme version of this genre with screaming vocals and stuff. But I really like them, but, like, I literally wrote them back and said, you're going to have to give me a while. I've never heard anything like this before in my life. And they're like, well, that's fine. You know, there's a lot going on that. But it's like they gave me, like, a typical traditional doom album to review first and then slammed me with a Thou record. Like, wow. And I just remember, like, other bands and stuff that I discovered back then I'm still following, too, you know?
Yeah.
Because after you get past the first wave of, like, the Candlemass, the Vitus, the Obsessed, and stuff like that, you know, this was, like, the deeper underground shit.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, what are some of your favorite bands on the scene right now?
Too.
That's one thing I was going to get to is, how did that come about, and tell me about the upcoming album Groovy and what to expect from it.
How did what come about?
Getting signed to Heavy Psych.
Oh, okay.
Tell me how that happened and lead us into what Groovy and what we can expect from Groovy.
Through the podcast that I did, I contact, you know, but dealt with him a lot with doing getting PR stuff from the label to his bands to play on the podcast and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So, and they were, and like I said, I was such a big fan of so many bands on that label. I've been following it for years. I buy so many records from him. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So they were, frankly, they were on the top of our list. And so I sent Dave the record, and he got back to me really fast. And, you know, I think he told me he was interested on a Thursday, and by Monday we were signing a contract, and then, you know, and everything took off since then. So it's been really exciting. Really happy with everything about it. You know, like, the Heavy Sex sounds are just on fire these days. There's so many great music coming out of that label. And more importantly, almost, it's like the bands that are on that label are kind of right up our alley. You know what I mean?
Exactly. When I saw the news that you guys had signed to Heavy Psych, I was excited because I know how their vinyls work, and like I said, I immediately pre-ordered a test pressing of Groovy as soon as I could, but it's just one of those labels that it makes perfect sense, and, you know, it excited me, and I mean, I've listened to the track you're previewing, Dig, and it's awesome. It's, you know, almost a sort of stripped-down approach, maybe, more so than maybe Spiral Fires in certain ways. But is that what more or less the record is, or what can we expect? What can you say?
Well, I think the one thing about releasing Dig as the first single, the first song on the record, and it also was probably the first song that I wrote, or that we wrote going into this batch of songs. I mean, Dig was even written before pretty much all the songs on even Spiral Fire EP. So,
gotcha.
The song has been around for 2 years or something like that, maybe even more. We played out a lot back or whatever. But anyway, the point is, so it kind of set the tone of what's to come. I mean, we call the album Groovy, and it's very deliberate. You know, like, I talk all the time about the three pillars of Geezer, which is heavy, trippy, and groovy. You know, like, these
yeah,
are the three things that we incorporate into our sound more than anything else.
And that's what I love about you guys. I just want to say that. That's why I love you guys. Don't ever stop that.
Well, thank you. So, with this record, it just kind of became apparent when the first kind of three or four songs came together that, like, hey, you know, the stuff we're doing here is really groovy, so let's just own that. And, you know, that became the direction of the album. And so all I can basically say is, as far as, you know, what to expect is, it's going to be something groovy. That's
nice. And heavy.
Yes. You know, but some songs are heavy, some songs are trippy, but they're all groovy.
Oh, yeah. Did you guys have a hand in the album art, or was that Heavy Psych Sounds? Because that's an amazing album cover.
Yeah, the album cover was done by a local guy. Steve, our drummer, he's an incredible graphic designer, and he's got his own clothing line. He's got Bone Shaker, is the name of his brand, and he's been kind of spearheading a lot of our visual stuff over the last few years that he's been in the band. And he had a basic idea, like, you know, even before we recorded the record, we had the concept together. We knew what the title was. We knew what we were going for. So he actually brought in a local artist by the name of Brian Williams, who he's worked with in the past for stuff for some of the stuff for his clothing line and some other bands that he works with. And Steve kind of worked with Ryan and kind of relayed what we were going for, and we tossed some ideas back and forth, and I just came back with this amazing thing that we were just blown away. And excuse me. In a lot of ways, it's every cliche in the book, but, like, you know, job.
Yeah.
You know, I just, it's everything I love about the genre. Basically, is encapsulated right there on that album cover.
Oh yeah, no doubt.
Like, you know, so, you know, the guy Duke Nevin, we're super excited about.
Yeah. Like, that's really cool that you used a local artist, too, because I'm down in western New York, south of Buffalo, so, I mean, I'm on the other end, but it's nice to know that, you know, there are others like me out there.
Yeah, I mean, look, we live in the Hudson Valley, you know, I'm like 8 miles from Woodstock or some shit like that, you know, like,
yeah.
There's a very thriving artistic and musical community where we are, and so whenever and wherever possible, like, we try and do everything as local as we can. I mean, literally, the album's recorded across the street from my house.
That's awesome, though.
Yeah, so we just happen to live up in the sixth, and seems like the middle of nowhere, like, there's an incredible thriving artistic community here, and we try and take advantage of that whenever we can.
Oh yeah, without a doubt, and that's how it should be done.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and up where I'm at, I'm in Cattaraugus, technically. It's the name of the town, and it's the county. So, like, you know, it's pretty rural as well. And we get the lake effect.
My wife's from Niagara Falls, so I know all about Western New York.
Yeah. Also, too, you have to keep me posted if you ever play anywhere like Buffalo or Rochester.
I'd love to get back out there. We're working on it, man, so hopefully soon.
Awesome. Because I'm going out to see The Obsessed on April 4th at the Montage in Rochester. And then on May 19th, Uncle Acid and Twin Temple are going to be at the East Ave Anthology. I'm stoked for those. You know, so there's a scene out there, and it's only like an hour or two for me. You know what I mean? Which, to me, is no big deal. It's worth it.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Very cool.
Like, you know, and it's awesome because it's the first time that I've been able to be a physical part of a scene I've been supporting for so many years. Because, you know, I didn't always have money for gigs when I was younger.
Oh, I hear you, man.
You know. What are some of, like, you're a guitar player. Do you write the lyrics? Or who handles those?
Yeah, I write all the lyrics.
I figured, because you're a power trio and you sing as well, so. Where does your inspiration come? Like, is it based on things you feel, or is it just based on, you know, how do you write a song?
For me, music almost always comes first. Like, you know, for me, it's a riff. And I'll start with a riff and then put two riffs together, put three riffs together. And depending on the situation, sometimes I'll bring the riffs to the band and we'll arrange something. And then I'll go home with a demo tape and write lyrics to that. Sometimes I'll just do a whole demo of the song myself and write lyrics to that. Many times I'll just listen to it and, you know, wait till something pops into my head. Sometimes it's a melody. Sometimes it's just two words that smash together, that create a feeling. I'm very much a Melvins fan, and Buzz is always, you know, and he's spoken about this many times, where, you know, for him, lyrics are more about, like, not being grammatically correct or telling a story or anything, but it's about, like, putting ideas together that normally wouldn't go together, or focusing on, you know, the rhythm of what you're saying, not necessarily what you're saying.
Yeah.
But I've always been that kind of a writer, whatever, writing lyrics. It's always vague. I try and leave everything open-ended, so it's open for interpretation, so people can bring their own experiences to what is going on in the song. So yeah, it just it can come from anywhere, but usually it's just, you know, putting a couple of weird words together and going from there.
Yeah, letting it kind of write itself.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Well, the best songs are the ones that happen almost instantaneously. I mean, you know, you get into a mindset where, you know, and this is stuff that's all this already. You